Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's January 16, 2012, and this is episode 318. Having skipped selecting my 2010 top 10 images at the start of 2011 because I was simply too busy, I missed going through this exercise. So this year, I was sure to make time to reflect on 2011 and select my favourite images. The act of looking through a year of photos is always a learning experience, especially when you compare your images to the previous years. You often start to see new patterns emerging, which is also something that I'd like to touch on today. To start, let's go over my selection process and recap on a few workflow details. If you recall from my Lightroom Digital Workflow podcasts, when I finish a shoot, I initially work through all of my images in a year, month, and day folder structure in what I call my Photo Originals folder. And I star rate the images in that folder to bring the best images from the shoot to the top, usually using 4 stars at that point. And then once I've been through all of the images, I show only the 4 stars. I use the filter in Lightroom to show only 4 stars and get rid of anything that wasn't selected in the first run. And then I single out the batches of images. Say I shot a number of images of a similar subject, and then I try to narrow down the selection to just 1 or 2 of each. And at that point, I'm basically giving the best shots of any particular subject 5 stars. And at the same time, I demote anything that doesn't make the cut to 2 stars, which is my once great rating. I also hit the X key to mark anything that is technically flawed, and now even anything that is just a duplicate or an insurance shot of the same thing. As my 5 stars float to the top, I start to look at the entire selection to see if anything stands out as not really fitting and, you know, to the group, to the series. And I continue to try to get to as few images as possible. Hitting the number 2 key every so often demotes the images out of the selection. And by now, if there's something that needs to be done, like working on the images in SilverFX Pro or ColorFX Pro, then I'll do that and leave a copy in my originals folder. The resulting TIFF or PSD files become the 5-star images and the originals become 3-star images. That's just my way of keeping tabs of the originals and the final version that I'm going to take and upload to my stock site or my gallery. If I don't need to edit the image at a pixel level, the original RAW file is what I use. I only create a copy when necessary. I then add titles and keywords and change the filter in Lightroom to display 3 stars or above to reshow my original RAW files as well as the modified files. And then I select all of those and I then just select an export preset that sends my selected images to my finals folder for that particular year. This does mean that I end up with a copy of the RAW and any PSD or TIFF files that I create in both my originals and my finals directory, but I like to have that redundancy. Of course, I also make other backups locally and in the cloud, but we won't go into that today. I generally end up with between 300 and 500 finals for each year, and for last year, I ended up with 491 final images. So I then created a 2011 top 10s collection in Lightroom and made that the target collection so that when I hit the B key, the image is added to that selection. I then selected my finals 2011 folder and started to go through my year of images. As you work through the year doing your photography, you start to create a mental list of images that really stand out. So my first pass was just a case of hitting the B key as I saw these images. But once done, I had 48 images in my list, roughly 10% of the year's best shots. I now selected my 2011 Top 10s collection and went through again thinking to myself, if it was a toss-up between this and another of the favourites that I had in there, which would I choose? And that usually makes it easier to hit the B key again and trim down the selection. After doing this a few more times, I got my list of candidates down to 28 images. I've included a screenshot of the thumbnails into the Enhanced podcast, but you won't be able to see the images there at all. But if you are listening to the Enhanced podcast on your iPhone, then, or even in iTunes on a computer, to view the full-sized images, go to mbp.ac/318 and then click on the images on the blog and they'll open up full screen or if as wide as you have your browser, so you'll be able to see more detail in the thumbnails there. The images that we'll look at throughout the rest of the blog are also there, of course. From this point on, you have to start getting pretty ruthless to drill down to just 10 images from a year. I cut the driftwood, camel, horse, cow shot because although I really like it, it was a man-made object, and I was still at least trying to reduce this selection down to my nature and wildlife work. Similarly, I removed the following boats in the Sawyer Harbour shot, though I couldn't bring myself to remove the shot of the wrecked minesweeper that we came across on New Island in the Falkland Islands on our way back from Antarctica. As we can see in the following screenshot of my now 15 selects, at this point I still had one shot of the Cocoon Tower in Shinjuku from the Gyoen Park, and although I really love that photograph, I decided that it had to go because of the, you know, so much of a human aspect. And then to the right of that, I also still had the shot of an airship flying over the main street in Ginza. And I begrudgingly hit the B key to remove that as well. And by this time, I was down to 13, though two of these were now slotted to get an honourable mention, which I'll get to shortly. So I was aiming to get this list down to 12, so just one more had to go. Continuing to weed out the weakest, the last shot I decided to remove was my Get the Flock Out of Here shot from just a few weeks ago, when I travelled over to the Kotokunuma, a pond where a large group of hooper swans winter, and I captured a number of swans in a bit of a ruckus, which I really like too. I removed this because it's a very busy shot with water flying everywhere, and maybe more an action shot than anything, but it was a tough decision. I really do like this as well. I was now down to 12 shots, but two of these alone were not in my top 10. Before we move on, though, to look at the top 10, I wanted to just talk about this new pattern that I've noticed in my work, or at least in my way of thinking about my work in 2011. A number of times throughout the year, I found myself treating multiple shots as a group of images where the synergy between two or more photographs raises the group of images above the sum of the individual shots alone. I've started to see more beauty in these small sets of images, such as the two iceberg shots from Antarctica that I made into gallery wraps to hang on my wall here in the studio. In this case, the top image did make the top 10, but the bottom image did not. But as a pair, or a set of images, I find this to be much more than just two images. It works really well, and I enjoy having them both right up there behind me on my wall. An even more powerful example, in my opinion, is the two photographs of the Hooper swans in flight that are left in the collection of my top 10, making it top 12 for now, images. They really do sort of stick in my mind as two images that I love to look at together. Neither of these images individually would make the cut, but as a set, they blow my socks off. The pale background with the white birds appeals to me a lot, and I did select both of these images for upload to my gallery after the first visit to Hokkaido in 2011, from the end of January to the start of February, before I went back up there with my workshop group in February. As you all know, I'm an avid printer, and I found myself more and more being attracted to these sets, not so much as a web offering, but as a printed set. The subtle shades of grey and the pale blue with the white of the swans in these images makes an absolute beautiful set of prints. And in this case, I don't necessarily think that either image alone would look that great as a solo print, but the two prints together, slightly offset on the wall, looks incredible, and I'm finding myself drawn towards looking at and seeing and selecting images like these for sets based on their appeal as a group rather than individual images. This can also be said of the single print to a degree, of course. Some images sing as a print when they might be, you know, they're not appreciated quite as much on screen, especially at the size that we share images online. But I've had this appreciation of a print for a long time, and so today I really wanted to talk about my new appreciation for sets of images, and the printed set in particular, in addition to the individual print. Okay, so having covered my selection process and my growing love for the photograph set, let's take a look at my top 10 images of 2011. This first image happens to have been the first chronologically as well, though I've ordered this list in my year in my favourite order, so we'll count down from 10 to number 1. This first shot, given into the elements, was shot on January 29 during that solo trip to Hokkaido when I pretty much circumnavigated the island. I don't think I talked about this trip in a podcast, but basically I travelled by ferry, which takes about 20 hours, up to the port of Tomakomai, and then drove across to near Sapporo in the southwestern corner of Hokkaido. And then I drove up the west coast and over, it took me a couple of days, and then across to the very top and down the east coast, and then over to where we photographed the Red Crown Cranes on my Hokkaido tour that will be starting this year in just a month now. I noticed this derelict house with a collapsed roof from the weight of the snow as I drove along, just after stopping for another few shots just a mile or so back. There'd been heavy snow overnight, so the white pristine snow on the ground coupled with the still heavy sky for what I consider a quite nice image. I worked the scene for quite a time, and with some shots with the house framed more tightly and a number of other variations, horizontal as opposed to vertical. But this one remained my favourite because we still see that heavy sky. I purposefully framed the shot almost half and half for balance, and I love looking at the detail in the lower half of the shot, with the especially in a print. There's so much detail in there. It really stands out as one of my favourite shots from 2011. At the other extent of the timeline, the next shot is the most recent, shot on December 28. I had driven over to the Kotokunuma Pond in Ibaraki Prefecture, as I do most years as the year draws to an end, and I spent a couple of days photographing the hooper swans that winter there. This year was especially poignant as I learned that the quake of March 11 had cracked the embankment on one side of the pond and most of the water had ran off in March, leaving not much more than a puddle. The swans that had probably intended to stay for a few more days or maybe a couple more weeks flew back to Siberia for the summer, and there was concern that this experience might have caused them to find somewhere else to winter this year. But the town people rallied together, the crack was fixed in around October, and the water levels are slowly rising, though still about 1.5 metres or 5 feet lower than normal. As you can see in this image, though, as they splash around, the water is still quite muddy. But the swans did come back. I counted 75 on my second day there. This shot is very dynamic, and although this was a show of superiority from the swan to the right, it almost makes me feel as though they're frolicking and the guy at the back is enjoying his shower with it was a relatively warm part of the day as the ice that was on the pond just a few hours earlier had thawed away. Number 8 is a simple shot from Hokkaido on February 18th, and you may recall the story of this shot from my Hokkaido tour update episodes. We'd just been photographing a tree just down from the beach, where the hot springs that flow into the Kusharo Lake keep the sand warm and the water from freezing, just enough for the swans that fly down from Siberia for the winter to make this their home until spring. I saw these swans all looking in the same direction off to camera left and grabbed a shot. My friend Graham Morgan asked what I was photographing, and I got one of those affectionate expletives that Graham does so well as he saw the image on my LCD and looked up to see that the scene was gone. I like this shot, again for its simplicity, another trend that I'm finding in my work. The swans are just close enough to the edge of the snowstorm, you know, close enough to me, that the snow doesn't really remove much of their clarity, but the rest of the image up to the copse in the distance there is gradually hidden more and more by the falling snow. On our third day in Hokkaido, it was snowing heavily after breakfast back at the hotel, and although we were scheduled to go over to the Kusharo Lake, where a couple of hours later I'd shoot the last image that we looked at, I made the call to go back to the Akan Crane Center, because we hadn't had any decent snow over the first few days, and I was unhappy that the group hadn't been able to get any shots with a beautiful white background. If it had been pre-arranged, shortly after we got there and the group had all set up their tripods and long lenses, there was about 30 minutes or so of frenzied mating dances where pairs of birds like this did their QI dance in the heavy snow that pretty much blotted out the top half, the darker top half of the frame that had been getting in the way on the previous days. And now with the fresh snow cleaning up the field that had become somewhat soiled, the scene was set for us all to get some shots of a lifetime. This is my favourite from this 30 minutes or so. Next up in sixth place, on our way back from Antarctica, we travelled around a few of the Falkland Islands, and this wrecked minesweeper had been run up onto the beach at New Island. We'd seen the ship when we first arrived, but I wasn't overly thrilled with the scene as the tide was much further in and it wasn't obvious that the ship had been run aground. After spending a magical few hours photographing albatross on the other side of the island, though, I set up for a few long exposures of this ship with the tide now further out, and I basically just spent a nice 10 minutes or so as we waited for some others of the group to get back. You might recall, too, that I did a colour version of this shot in my Colour Effects Pro 4 video, which I also like a lot, but again, the simplicity of this shot wins over for my top 10. When I first got back from Antarctica, I'd have said that this shot from Gentoo Point was going to be my favourite of the year. I still love it a lot, and I have a print of this at 24 by 36 inches on my wall here in the studio, but it kind of got pipped at the post by the next four images in the larger sort of scale of things throughout the year. Part of it is most certainly a heightened appreciate for the simpler image, but this shot is still, in my mind, kind of a, I don't know, a classic scene, even though I say it myself. This too is a long exposure at just under 2 minutes, which gave the sea a cotton candy feel to it, in the bottom right side there. But also, it made the clouds flow a little, which, coupled with the magic of Silver FX Pro 2, created a beautiful dramatic sky. The distant peaks add to the drama, and then the seven penguins that had stayed almost perfectly still for 2 minutes top this off, especially in a large print. As we sailed home past Deception Island, this beautiful blue iceberg caught my eye, and with the help of a bit of Lightroom processing, then later some Color FX Pro, I was able to really bring out the heavy sky and blue of the ice to, surprisingly to me, to bring this shot ahead of the Gentoo Point shot in my ranking for the year. This is one of the pair that we looked at earlier at, you know, the two iceberg shots that I did the canvas wraps, the gallery wraps of. And I do believe that this stands out well on its own too. The note that the 2-to-1 ratio is something else that I've found myself doing quite a lot more this year. The gallery wraps that I have on my wall are 13 by 26 inches, and another size of these that I'd really like to do is 20 by 40. That would be impressive, if I had the room left on my wall, that is. Okay, so into the top three now, and shot number three is from February 13th on the snow monkey leg of my Winter Wildlife Wonderland tour. And I'm still enjoying this shot so much, despite the fact that the young monkey's face is slightly out of the depth of field. This was a bit of a grab shot, as I saw the youngster watching the adult snow monkey shaking the snow off his mane, and I didn't quite get it lined up squarely enough to get both faces sharp, but still, the expression on the youngster's face was enough for me to not only keep this in my selection, but to secure their place in the top 10 for the year. Number two was a bit of a surprise, almost like a present. On the 5th of May, my wife and I went for a walk in the Shinjuku Gyoen Park here in Tokyo, and we'd been trying for a while to time it so that I could capture a macro photo of the seeds of a dandelion puffball as my wife blew them away. The timing of this was incredibly difficult, and she was starting to get frustrated, and this is one of the last shots that we made. When I got home, I went through the images, and the original colour version, I wasn't really taken with this shot at all. So I left the images in my library, as they were too good to throw out, but not good enough to process. Then, towards the end of August, as I recuperated from my surgery in June to remove that pesky brain tumour, I went back through my library, and these images jumped out at me. I figured that if the colour version wasn't working, it was at least worth trying a black and white version, so I threw it into Silver FX Pro 2 and immediately fell in love with what I saw. A little bit of selective darkening on the right side and the bottom below the seeds as they fly away, and a colour filter to darken the background even more, really brought this shot out for me. And this is one of those that made the hair on the back of my head stand up when I held the print of it as well. At the end of my first trip to Hokkaido, after circumnavigating the island doing landscape work, I hooked up with a friend and went over to the Akan Crane Center for a few more days before sailing home again on the ferry. During those few days, I made a number of close-up crane shots that I call my Tancho studies. Tancho is just the Japanese word for a red crown crane. I've been making these studies each year when I go and always like the results, despite them starting out as a way of killing time as we wait for the birds to dance or fly in or out of the field at the centre. This particular shot, though, became an instant favourite of this year's series of studies and has pretty much stayed at the top of my list of favourite shots for this year, and may even be one of my favourite shots of my own of all time. I just love it. Again, the simplicity is appealing to me, and the fact that the white along the left side of the bird as we look at the photo is darker than the background, but then the right side being hit by the light from the slightly overcast sky is just a bit brighter than the background, giving us just enough separation to make us think. The angle of the head and the eye, even though the eye doesn't have much of a catch light, it's just reflected enough of the white of the snow to separate it from the black of the feathers on the crane's face. To top it off, for me, you know, the crane has that beautiful splash of red on its crown, giving us a nice colour contrast. This, to me, really portrays this beautiful bird at its best, despite it not being a dancing shot like the one that we looked at earlier. So there you have it. That's my top 10 shots from 2011, a year that came with its fair share of challenges too. As I mentioned earlier, and as many of you already know, in June we found out that I had a sizable brain tumour, and by the time we found it, I'd started to have funny turns, and then as we started to work on the plans for the surgery, it caused a kind of a mild stroke that had basically caused a change of plans and semi-emergency surgery. Of course, the fact that I'm still here, now working again and podcasting each week, shows that not only was the surgery successful, but I've recovered well thanks to the amazing staff at the Jikei University Hospital in Shinbashi, Tokyo. You might also recall that although most of the tumour over my pituitary gland was removed, the surgeons decided that it was too dangerous to also remove the cyst that was the size of a golf ball in the right side of my brain, knowing that they had a good chance of shrinking that down with medication later. Despite the fact that I had an allergic reaction to the planned medication that almost killed me from liver failure a week later, I started on some new medication that would hopefully shrink the cyst a month after the surgery. An MRI scan after 2 months of taking the medication and 3 months after the surgery showed that the cyst had shrunk to around a tenth of its original size. Then, last weekend, I went back for another MRI almost 6 months after starting on the new medication, and as the neurosurgeon, Dr. Jorki, flicked through the MRI images with the wheel of his mouse, he had to do a double take. He went right past the only two images that showed anything at all. He was jumping up and down with delight as he exclaimed that we've won. He sat down again and we shook hands with our other hands cupped around the back of each other's, and he smiled a broad smile as I fought back the tears as we looked at it back at the screen at basically what was a tiny slither of soft tissue that was all that's left of the cyst. It's a tiny little bit of membrane. That's all there is now. The MRI also showed us a bit of space above the slither of membrane, which means that it's no longer putting any pressure on my brain at all. My wife was with me and the three of us couldn't believe our eyes. Dr. Jorki had thought that it would take much longer to get rid of the cyst, and he'd beaten himself up about having to leave it in there in the first place. He told us, though, that I'd lost a lot of blood, and Every time they went after the cyst, I bled so much that any more would have meant a blood transfusion. And he also feared that had they gone after it, they would have damaged my optic nerve or something else, maybe causing paralysis. And he knew that I'd just given up my day job and started out as a full-time professional photographer and thought that a photographer without his eyesight might as well be dead. So he decided to stop there. Again, knowing that they would probably be able to shrink the cyst with medication. It was touch and go for a while with the allergic reaction and everything, but his decision turned out to be perfect. I'm so grateful to not only have come out of this alive, but to have no side effects that we're aware of at least. I'm grateful to Dr. Jorki, the neurosurgeon, for his skills as a surgeon, but also for having the wherewithal to stop when he did. I'm also grateful to Drs. Matsuaki and Mori in the ENT department for their part, making it possible to do the operation through my nose and then taking care of me afterwards. I've been washing the back of my nose out with salt water every morning and night for the last 6 months, but that also stopped last week, as things are now cleared up enough that I don't think I no longer need to do that. Of course, there's a whole plethora of other people that cared for me in the hospital during that time, and none of it would have been possible without the entire infrastructure, but I'm just so grateful for the way things went. As we welcome in 2012, a number of friends online said that they bet I was happy to see the back of 2011. But that really isn't the case. For sure, I was unlucky to get the tumour in the first place, but I was so lucky to have been here in Tokyo at this point in time and to have been almost miraculously channeled through to these amazing doctors from the first few hospitals that I visited. It's almost a miracle that I came out of 2011 at all, but I truly feel that I've come out of it stronger than ever. So to me, 2011 was not a bad year. I'm still able to do what I love and love what I do. I wanted to also once again thank my brother Sean and his wife Zina for coming over to support us, and of course to my wife Yoshiko for all of their support during that traumatic time. Finally, I once again wanted to thank each of you for your friendship and support, and thank you for sticking around. That was my 2011, and here's to what I think is going to be an amazing 2012 and beyond. If any of you have put together a collection of your top 10 images from 2011, do share a link in the comments section of this blog post at mbp.ac/318. or our photography forum post for this episode. I'd love to see your year in photographs too. Thanks once again for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc. All of the links are at the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.